You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, Kings fans. Welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast, your daily hub for Sacramento Kings coverage. If you're looking for in-depth analysis, game-by-game breakdowns, highlights, interviews with all the local and national experts, full coverage of the entire Sacramento Kings offseason, year-round coverage of your favorite team in the NBA. We do not stop during the downtimes. We do not stop during the dog days of summertime from opening day to opening day. We always have coverage of the Sacramento Kings here on the Locked On Kings podcast. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host. I'm from Sports 1140 KHDK. That's the flagship radio station of the Kings in Sacramento. I work there as an on-air host and a multimedia journalist and reporter. Apologize about no podcast yesterday, but I wanted to let everything breathe for a bit. Obviously, the biggest story and things that are happening right now with the Sacramento Kings involve Luke Walton and the sexual assault allegations. If you want to hear all the details about that, you can go back and listen to my podcast from Tuesday. You can also find all the information on Twitter at @MattGeorgeKHDK is how you can find me. I've been tweeting out all the information really that comes out and everything that I can find and all the updates that come through about this entire sexual assault and lawsuit situation happening with the new Kings head coach. On today's podcast, I'm interviewing a friend of mine, a co-worker of mine, the host of The Lowdown on Sports 1140 KHDK. It's Damian Barling. He's going to be joining me here in just a little bit, but I wanted to preface this interview by saying we mentioned Luke Walton and we discussed Luke Walton during this interview. However, I'm not asking him directly, and basically we are operating out of or off of the premise, the idea that the Kings are going to be moving forward with Walton as their head coach. That's not saying that Damian and myself are dismissing the severity of this situation and of this lawsuit going down. And who knows, the Kings may end up firing Luke Walton depending upon what comes out. That's all up in the air. We don't know. But what we do know is that the Kings, who are currently interviewing assistant coaches, are operating as if nothing is changing and Luke Walton will be their head coach going forward. So that's how we will continue to operate here on the Locked On Kings podcast. Of course, if any news breaks or anything changes in the situation, we will discuss it and bring it here to the Locked On Kings podcast. However, for this episode here today, another exit interview based off of what the Kings did last season and going into this summer and next season, that's the focal point. That's what we're discussing. That's what we're talking about, not the sexual assault allegations. So there's no ignorance here. We're not trying to ignore the issue or brush the issue under the rug because it is a very significant and severe situation that is happening. But we're going back to our roots here on Locked On Kings, which is talking Kings basketball, what is happening on the floor of this organization from a basketball standpoint. So hopefully you can understand that. So don't be expecting in this interview any hot takes or opinions from myself or Damian about this entire situation. So now that we have that out of the way, why don't you enjoy my conversation with the Lowdown's Damian Barling. Carrying on with the exit interviews following the Sacramento Kings 2018-2019 season, Kings win 39 games. They fire head coach Dave Yeager. A lot going on as we enter into what I expect to be a very busy and exciting summer, as the Kings will hopefully be able to break the playoff drought come next year, but that's next year. Right now, I am joined by Damian Barling. He is KHDK's host of the midday show, The Lowdown. Also, you can see him before every single Kings game, or at least home game. He hosts Courtside with Cody Baylor and Jason Ross, also his co-hosts of The Lowdown, provides great coverage of the Sacramento Kings and all of the NBA, but he's not specifically a Sacramento Kings guy. He always provides fantastic perspective for the Kings because he doesn't necessarily have that blind love for the team that many Sacramentans have, and he's kind enough to come back here on the Locked On Kings podcast and join me. D-Lo, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. I actually love the Sacramento Kings. I just don't cover them like I love them.
Well, that's
you know what I mean? Like I try to cover them from a journalist perspective rather than a fan perspective. I feel like we have a lot of fans that cover the team. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a certain way to do that. I just try to cover them in a different way.
I wish I had your ability to do that. It is impossible for me, growing up as a diehard fan of this team, to completely hide the Kings fan, although I do try to be as fair and straightforward as I possibly be or can be. And you know, D'Lo, from interacting with me both on the air and off the air, that I have a very optimistic approach to the Kings. A lot of that comes from being a fan of the team, but a lot of that also comes from my idea of what I thought this Kings team could be. Now, winning 39 games blew things out of the water for me, and there's a lot of elements to what made this team as successful as they were this season. Still have a long way to go, but for me, the two brightest spots were De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, and that sparked a debate that I've had with some listeners of the Locked On Kings podcast as to which of the two was more impressive, and if I was to give a most improved player award to one of the two, who would get it? And for me, it was Buddy Hield, the jump that he made from last year to this year, going from, is he going to be a starter in the NBA to one of the NBA's best shooters and a consistent starter, nearly a 30-point per game scorer. Well, not averaging, but he scored 30 points per game a decent handful of times for the Kings this season. He was the biggest surprise for me. Which of the two would you give that most improved player award? Which of the two is more exciting to you?
Oh, man, I'm not sure that those two questions don't have two different answers. Most improved, I feel like, is De'Aaron Fox. I know that Buddy had a big jump in numbers, but I think what's helping Buddy is the system. Like, Buddy was a great shooter at Oklahoma. Like, what we saw this year is what college basketball fans saw when Buddy was a senior at Oklahoma. Like, he's been capable of doing that. He obviously didn't get an opportunity to do it in New Orleans, and he, you know, last year, or not last year, I guess, you know, 2 years ago, the rebuilding / tanking, whatever that was year, like, he wasn't really showcased. So I feel like he's been that guy. Like, that's what he was drafted for. He was drafted to be that shooter. And now he's getting the opportunity to do it in the right offense that fits his skill set. De'Aaron made a huge sophomore jump. A lot of times, because De'Aaron had a good rookie season, and a lot of times you see, you know, sometimes referred to as that sophomore slump, or you'll see a guy come out in his second year. We actually saw it with Donovan Mitchell to start the season. You know, obviously he had a tremendous finish to his season, but the start, it's like, man, that doesn't look like Donovan Mitchell from last year. Whereas De'Aaron stepped out and was like, whoa, he's better. And a lot of that is, you know, the system and the way Dave Yeager chose to run this team and what they had implemented from, you know, Summer League and California Classic and training camp and all of that stuff on through the season. But if I were to say most improved, I would say it's De'Aaron Fox. If you're asking me who's the most exciting player, I just think because of the way the NBA is in 2019, it's Buddy Hield, because Buddy's going to shoot those. He's going to shoot threes at a rapid pace. And if he gets hot, you know, he's going to, you know, do what Dame Lillard did the other night. He's going to pull up from, you know, 37 feet and go for 50.
What was the more impressive element of De'Aaron's development from last season to this season? Was it his outside shooting and scoring ability, or was it his ability to pass and facilitate an offense? What jumped off the page for you?
His defense. He was a better defender. The only thing that frustrated me about De'Aaron on defense is we saw him be an elite defender at certain points in the game. We saw him be a fine defender at certain points in the game. But then we saw him be non-existent as a defender, which was, you know, kind of the Kings as a whole through various points of games and really through various points of the season. But if you ask me what the one thing that stood out, if I could only pick one, it was on the defensive end.
Yeah.
To expand a little bit, you know, you go second, then to answer, you know, which one of the two that you presented to me that I thought was better, it was his ability to create for others.
About his defensive adjustments and his growth there, I 100% agree with you with his ability to be a lockdown defender. The biggest game that jumps to mind to me, I don't know if you were there for the full game or not, D'Lo, was when he shut down Mike Conley in the fourth quarter in Sacramento after Mike Conley had a 30-point game through the first three quarters. Just an element, an example of some of the stuff that you're talking about with De'Aaron Fox. And it's difficult, I understand, from a player perspective, to commit to playing defense and going 100% on that end of the floor, especially with the league being such an offensive heavy league. But to build upon that, to expand upon that, the fact that De'Aaron Fox played all but one game this season, the tempo that he plays, the fact that they were trying to stretch his production out through an 82 game season. Is there an element to that that you understand why he doesn't play at 100% on the defensive end all the time, or is that just a bad excuse to you?
No, I think it's when you run an offense like that, you're not going to be able to – you can't exert 100% on both sides of the floor. Like, that's why I was trying to be less hard on the Kings' defense as some other people were, because if you're going to run an offense the way that the Sacramento Kings were going to run, particularly the way they started the year when they had, you know, Dwayne Wade and Eric Spoelstra and Greg Popovich and all these respected NBA figures just raving about the pace and raving about what they're doing, you're going to sacrifice somewhere. And it's going to be on the defensive end. Like, unless you're an elite marathoner, you're not sprinting the entire marathon.
Right.
You're getting your win there at some point. And that's closer to what an NBA game is than, you know, a 100-meter dash. So that's what I would equate it to, because you would generally see it, you talked about Mike Conley, you talked about that Memphis game, which is a great example. There's a couple of Oklahoma City games in there, too, that you could use as other examples where you saw for 2.5, 3.5 minutes, guys like De'Aaron Fox and Willie Cauley-Stein would just get, you know, you would suddenly see them playing defense in a different way. And it's like, well, you can mentally commit to that when you only have to do it for 2.5 minutes. It's like, okay, we're almost done. 2.5 minutes. Let's run both sides of the floor. 2.5 minutes. We could do this. We got to shut them down. We got to get a basket. We got to put this game away. That's a lot easier to do than to say, okay, guys, for 48 minutes, we're going to have to go all out on both sides of the floor.
Building off of the transition start that they had, it was something that was difficult for this team. They came out of the gate just red hot, caught a lot of teams by surprise with their pace. But as you saw, teams adjust and force the Kings into half-court offensive sets. That's where the Kings really slowed down, especially in the latter half of the season. To you, is that one of the biggest areas, or the biggest area that this Kings team needs to work on and improve, that half-court offense, or is there something else?
No, they need to improve defensively first. Their half-court offense, it's up to the team that they're playing to take them out of their game, right? And the Kings game isn't a half-court offense. The Kings game is transition. The Kings game is to push the floor and start your offense when the ball is inbounded and you're on the, you're 70 feet away from the basket. The Kings offense is already in works. Would you like to see him get better? Yeah, but that just means you have a better all-rounded game. And now you're starting to talk about, you know, if you start to ask for those things, now you're talking about what the Golden State Warriors do. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about what the Milwaukee Bucks do, and you're talking about the elite of the elite teams. I'd like to see the Sacramento Kings defense improve first. That way, if the shot's not falling, or more importantly, and I think this is what we're going to see next year, is their pace, assuming, of course, they're, you know, going to play the same way, and I think the common belief is they are, assuming that it's the same, you're not going to catch Eric Spoelstra off guard anymore. You're not going to catch Greg Popovich off guard. You're not going to catch anybody off guard, because you've already played a couple of teams twice. You've played a couple of teams three times, played a couple of teams four times, and everybody's going to know how the Kings play. So that pace isn't going to catch any, it's not going to be, whoa, look at what they're doing. It's like, okay, they're still playing their same way. Here's how we take them out of the game. There's enough film on them now. It's like a quarterback. It's like you have quarterbacks who have these, you know, monster first years as starters. We saw it with Tony Romo. I'm interested to see how Patrick Mahomes responds. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear all these talks about, you know, quarterbacks taken in the draft and all of that. But what happens their second year when you've got all of this film on them? And defenses can adjust and coaches can game plan. And I think that's going to be important for the Kings, and that's going to be why the defensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the court, is going to be so important for them this year, this coming year.
both Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles entering into their sophomore seasons next year. And I think you and I both agree, but I don't want to speak for you, so correct me if I'm wrong, that Luka Doncic is the rookie of the year this season. I know that was a controversial pick when the Kings ended up taking Marvin Bagley over Doncic, but did you see enough from Bagley this season to not only be okay with the pick, but confident in Bagley maybe becoming the better player down the road?
More than enough. Yeah, I saw more than enough. I think Bagley is a stud. I thought I was actually fine with the pick. I was fine with the Marvin Bagley pick. The whole Luka Doncic thing to me is funny. Like if you're a Luka guy, that's great. But you would have had to do something in free agency to kind of fill some other spots on your roster. And I don't know that the Kings haven't had an impact on free agency yet. I don't know that they will this year either. Maybe they will. I'm not really sure, but I'm perfectly okay with the way Marvin Bagley worked out. And I mean, he's a starter in this league, and he's a potential. I mean, he's a big, big name player. I mean, he might make the All-Star team before De'Aaron does. I know people look at the Kings and go, man, that De'Aaron Fox is going to be an All-Star. Man, Marvin Bagley might make it first.
If last year's draft was done over again, is Luka, Marvin Bagley, and Trae Young 1, 2, 3?
Oh, man. Luka, Marvin Bagley, Trae Young.
I just wonder how much.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think Phoenix is disappointed in DeAndre Ayton.
Right.
I don't know that anyone is disappointed. Like, this was at least through 1 year. Dude, this was a really good draft, mm-hmm. and I don't know that anybody's walking away upset. Like, I think everybody's happy with who they got. I feel like the Kings are and should be happy with Marvin Bagley. I think Phoenix is happy with DeAndre Ayton. Jaren Jackson is going to work out just fine in Memphis. Trae Young in Atlanta. Like, I'm going to say no. I don't think so. I don't think so.
We heard a lot of hype about Harry Giles, especially from his teammates and coaches with the year that he had just practicing and getting back in shape, and then started off a little bit slow trying to figure out how to play without getting out of foul trouble. Like, we saw consistent improvement with Marvin Bagley. We definitely saw consistent improvement with Harry Giles, particularly when he came back from getting his confidence up, dominating for a game or two in the G League. How about Harry Giles' growth and development? Are you confident enough with what you've seen that he will continue on that path and that he was a quote-unquote good risk for this Kings team?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not good. It was great. Like, it was very, very low risk given where he was drafted and extremely high reward. I've never seen a player or covered a player or talked about a player or talked to anyone associated with the player who just unsolicited would start raving about him. Like, when we were preparing for last year's draft, when we found out the Kings were going to have, you know, the number two pick, that completely changed who we were going to talk to. Like, it suddenly put us like, now we need to reach out to some of the, you know, the biggest names in college basketball, because now we're talking the number two pick and not what we thought would be like number eight. And we were able to get Jeff Capel, who is the head coach at Pitt, and recruited Harry at Duke. And we were talking about, we had him on to discuss Marvin Bagley. Mm-hmm. He completely unsolicited started talking about Harry Giles. That happened with a lot of guys we talked to where they'd be like, yeah, Bagley, yeah, the Kings could have some things going if they went Bagley, or, you know, Luka, or who knows, maybe DeAndre falls. But you know what's great that you guys got in Sacramento? It's Harry Giles, and here's why. I've never experienced that with anyone before. Harry wasn't even on the floor the year before, but we would get so many people who would talk about him and rave about him. And he's one guy, you know, because of his age, because he had the – you know, kind of the red shirt year, so to speak. He actually developed from game one to game 82. And not just his game, but I would watch him before the first game. I would watch him early in the season warm up, go through his drills, do that whole thing. And then by the time I was watching him that last game of the season, dude, he looked bigger. He looked more muscular. He looked like he had gone through like a physical change.
Yeah.
During the 82-game season, man. And if he has an off season like that, Dude, that Bagley Marvin Bagley combo at the Harry Giles Marvin Bagley combo is, that's going to be tough for some teams to deal with.
And I've heard from multiple people, and maybe you'll echo the same thing, Damian, but these two guys are so young. I mean, Harry's entering technically his third year in the league, although it'll be his second officially as a player. Marvin Bagley also entering his second year as a player. But many have said these guys are so young, they've barely scratched the surface of what they can be, both with their development physically, their body development, but also just their basketball IQ. Are you seeing more of the same? You expect sky's the limit for both these guys?
100%. 100%.
I know I'm bouncing all over the place. I'm going to transition to Vlade Divac, Sacramento Kings general manager, who you've been critical of in the past with some moves that he's made. You've also been very positive with other moves that he has made. Has he earned the vote of confidence that his four-year contract extension suggests?
Absolutely. Yeah, he has for me, because this is the first, you know, when he sat up there at that Luke Walton press conference, it was the first time I felt like he was running the team. I never felt like he was running the team. I know he says he was. I know the company line is that he was. But there's no way that he traded DeMarcus Cousins without it being signed off by someone else. Mm-hmm. I'm sure someone signed off, you know, whoever signs the checks, because you're going to owe Dave Yeager, you know, a year's worth of pay here, assuming he doesn't get a job. I understand someone had to sign off on that in that regard. But this is the absolute first time that I feel like that Vlade Divac is 100% running the team. And, you know, what he does this offseason is a big deal. How this Luke Walton thing shakes out is a big deal. There's a risk with Willie Cauley-Stein. We'll have to see what direction he goes, because I'm of the belief that Willie Cauley-Stein is a great player for De'Aaron and De'Aaron's style.
Yeah.
And I don't think you're going to be able to pick that up on the free agent market. Like, I know Enes Kanter was a name that was mentioned around the trade deadline for the Kings. And it's like, that's cool. We saw what Enes Kanter did against the Oklahoma City Thunder and how valuable he was for Portland. He doesn't play like Willie.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously a lot of this is going to depend on Willie's market, what Willie's willing to, you know, play for. And if the front office and the coaching staff even, you know, want Willie back here. But this is an important offseason for him, but I think just that he's done enough to get the vote of confidence from whether it's the ownership group or whoever, he is very clearly running the team, and I've never felt like that before.
Vlade, once again, is putting himself back out there, Damian, saying after firing the best coach since Rick Adelman here in Sacramento, who led the Kings to 39 wins for the first time since 2005-2006.
Sorry, I'm sorry, Matt. I'm getting a call from Mike Malone right now. He's just, I think he might have something to say about that. But that's okay. I'll decline the call and talk to him later.
Actually, you know what? You might want to pick that up. Why don't you patch him through? Because I have some love to send his way. No, and that's a big segment of what could have been in Sacramento for many. I'm amongst the belief that had that move not went down and things not played out the way that they did, maybe he and DeMarcus Cousins are still here in Sacramento. But we'll never ever know with that. But at least win total wise, it was Dave Yeager that has been the best coach since Rick Adelman here in Sacramento. And Vlade putting himself out there, letting go of Yeager, making this move, and he was very vocal about how this move, hiring Luke Walton and letting go of Dave Yeager, was all about taking this team to the next level. Even though he does have now a four-year contract, Damian, how quickly do you expect the Kings to, or how much time are you giving him to show that improvement? Do the Kings have to be in the playoffs as soon as next season before it's a disappointment already?
Are you talking about Vlade's four-year contract or Luke's four-year contract?
I mean, they're on the same page.
I just didn't know which one you were referring to in terms of making the playoffs next year. I mean, we can lump them both together. Like, no, I don't think the Kings enter next year playoff or bust. Like, I think it's foolish that so many people were like, well, you can pencil the Kings in for 50 wins. Oh, it's okay if the Kings don't make the playoffs next year because they're definitely going to make it next year. And, you know, It's a year round game. It's a tried and true tradition. It's like when people talk about all-star snubs and you talk about guys that didn't make the all-star team, like people who were screaming, Buddy Hield should make the all-star team. Okay. Buddy Hield was an all-star snub. Oh, okay. Who are you removing? Like, who are you removing from the Western Conference where you're going to put Buddy Hield on it? And I'll ask the same question. Sacramento Kings are making the playoffs next year. Great. Who's not? Are you willing to say that the Spurs aren't going to make the playoffs? Okay. Are you willing to say the Clippers aren't going to make the playoffs? Because that's insane. I think the Clippers are going to win the Western Conference next year.
Well,
are you willing to say that the Warriors are suddenly gone or that the Portland Trailblazers are gone? Maybe it's Oklahoma City that's gone. Like, who are you willing to say isn't going to make the playoffs and that the Kings are? So many of those teams, you know, Denver isn't, San Antonio isn't, Oklahoma City isn't, but a lot of those teams are on an upward trajectory, just like the Sacramento Kings are. So saying that they're, you know, locked in for the playoffs next year, that's tough, man. That's tough. So I'm not of that belief, but you don't want them to win less than 39 games. I'll tell you that.
Right.
Because I think one line that Blade had that I really, really liked, because Jason and I discussed this, you know, we didn't know Dave Yeager was going to be fired. But Matt, you're there every night. You're at the Golden 1 Center every night. There was a feeling, like there was a certain awkwardness to the last few weeks of the season where it was obvious, at least to us,
that yes,
some conversation had taken place, something had happened, because there started to be a lot of chatter. And it was just one of those things where it's like, no one told us he's being fired, but man, we're not dumb. Like, we get it. Like, we can feel it. We can see it. Like, something happened. And so when Blade stepped to the podium that night and said, or that day, that afternoon, and said, well, we think we could have won more games this year. Like, 39 is great, but we think we could have won more. We could have won more. I thought that was such a great line, because it's something that Jason and I had talked about a million times. If you're going to fire Dave Yeager, you have to do it with the belief that you could have won more games. And the fact that Blade said that, oh, we could have won more games, to me was like, oh, man, this dude's got onions. This dude's got some serious onions, and he's putting all of his eggs in the basket of whoever his next coach is. So I don't think it's playoffs or bust because of the incredible competitiveness of the Western Conference, but you better not win less than 39 games.
That is Damian Barling, host of KHDK's midday show, The Lowdown, alongside Jason Ross, former host of this Locked On Kings podcast, also with Cody Baylor and the champ, Chris Verlotte. I suppose I should throw him in there as well. You should listen to them every single weekday, with the exception of complications or conflicts with A's baseball. Again, noon to 3 o'clock, and check out Damian Barling on Twitter, Instagram, all the social medias. He's active for the most part on all of them. Instagram is really the best place to go if you want to follow what Damian's doing. D-Lo, thank you again for taking the time, my man, and I'll enjoy our coverage and conversation throughout this summer.
You bet, buddy. Thank you.
Huge thank you to Damian for taking the time this morning to appear on the Locked On Kings podcast. We'll definitely have him back on at some point later on in the summer as we're getting ready for training camp and the start of next season. More exit interviews to come. I have some other names in the works, guys, that I'm trying to lock down, some names that I think you will enjoy. But if there's anyone you would like for me to try and reach out and talk to and do an exit interview with that's Kings specific here on Locked On Kings podcast, let me know. I would love to hear who you would like to have on the show, and I'll do my best to try and book them and get them on. You can reach me on Twitter again, at MattGeorgeKHDK, or you can email me, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. If you have a second, head over to the iTunes store, wherever you listen to this podcast, whether it's Himalaya, Spotify. If there's an area for you to leave a review and a rating for this podcast, please do that. That helps us out a ton in two ways. One, it boosts our or the attention that we get from new listeners. And number two is it helps us grow and improve as a podcast. That's a great place for you to post any criticisms or improvements you would like to see or hear. It's all fair game, and it helps us grow. So please do that if you have a second. I certainly would appreciate it. Until tomorrow, my name is Matt George. Thank you for listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.